So in the presence of Senator Crawford and myself, Senator Paul Fisher will do shortly. We have before us three bills. House Bill 291, providing for TB examinations and quarantine. Senate sponsor substitute for House Bill 292, relating to TB screening of school employees. And Senate Bill 508, supplemental appropriations to the Department of Health and Social Services for payments as grants to medical social services. And simply beat that because of providing for an effective date. Quorum's presence under Fisher. Dick Fisher is here. Who is here on House Bill 291?
Yes.
Dr. Redwell? Testify.
Would you like your dessert?
That's a treat for my wife if she comes. This needs to be.
You're not going to eat it.
It's awfully tempting.
Yes.
Mustn't do that.
What?
Dr. Bone, I'm Deputy Commissioner of Health and Social Services. House Bill 291, and I hope that you have copies of our position paper, which date back to the last year when this bill was introduced. Briefly, the department supports the passage of this bill. The bill is designed to require an individual suspected of having an active case of pulmonary TB to submit to an examination and to be able to order the quarantine of a person with active pulmonary TB for a period of 6 months when such an action is necessary to preserve and protect the public health. Let me cite you.
This is quite a day for me. We're trying to get people put away in mental institutions and then confined for TB.
Well, let me tell you the story on this. It's not necessarily put away, it's to make sure that they undergo treatment. A perfect example of this, and I won't mention the name of the town, but one of the communities, the larger communities on the Yukon River, was the genesis that we finally had to ask for this bill. And this particular case was that a bartender had active case of tuberculosis and caused 12 cases of tuberculosis in the community that was directly traced back to him. We attempted to get the individual under treatment when the study was done, and the individual was very resistant to one treatment and to two take precautions against the further spread of the disease. And the statutes are very nebulous, allowing us to get such people examined and under treatment. And I'll be quite candid with the committee. It was really some extra legal things that were done by the district attorney that allowed us to get this person under treatment. The bill is quite clear. We suspect that it would be on a very infrequent basis that the authority to contain this bill would be exercised. We think from past experience that orders for examination may be required not more than about three times a year, and that quarantine orders would be used even less frequently, perhaps not even once a year, particularly as the public became aware of a statutory provision which could compel quarantine. And if I might add, if penalties or actions are stipulated in the law, they themselves usually have an educational feature of getting people to abide by the provisions of the law without having to actually exercise the law itself. We heartily support the passage of this bill and urge the committee to seriously consider it.
How much vote in the House was?
Yes, sir. This is, you might consider it a companion bill. It's an act relating to tuberculosis screening of school employees. This, again, has been stimulated by incidents that have occurred in Alaska. In one of our larger communities, a teacher was discovered to be the foci of infection of 19 students because of the fact that the teacher had an undetected case of pulmonary tuberculosis. In the past year, there's been two school employees with minimal TB that have been found in Alaska. I guess probably the best example I can give you of anything and is in Denver, one teacher who had an undetected case of active TB, caused over 100 cases of pulmonary TB in school children. But forgetting about the extreme example in Denver, I just call your attention to the fact that we're running into the same experience in Alaska. And what this bill does is that it requires an annual examination rather than what the law said about initial employment and then every third year. Incidentally, this bill, as well as the other bill, have negative fiscal marks.
Why is that? Wouldn't there be more negative fiscal notes for the department, you mean, or negative fiscal notes for...
Yes, sir. Yeah, it's obviously not a negative fiscal note for the school district or the employee, depending upon how the school district handles such things. I'll give you a little analysis if you're interested. In 83, there was about 16,500 public school employees and an estimated 1,500 private school employees. And we estimate the growth rate in school employment to be about 3% a year, and that the proportion of employees requiring chest x-ray is about 5%. About 95% will be handled by tuberculin testing, which will cost them nothing, because it'll either be done by our public health nurses or the school nurses. And we supply the BCG free of charge. About 60% of the employees will be located in areas where x-ray facilities are operated by a municipality are available. In other words, either in Anchorage or Fairbanks, for example, or here in Juneau. And about 40% will be located in areas where x-ray service would have to be purchased from the private sector. And we figure it'll cost about $25 a film. So now that's 5% of 18,000, which is, forgive me if I do some hasty arithmetic, that's about 900. And about 40% of that 900, about 360, would have to have x-rays done in the private sector. The balance, the 60% of the 540 to 900 would be done in services.
What would the school district say to ANIAC do? Would they?
$10,000.
What would happen in a school like the Cuspid district in ANIAC? Would
they
have a nurse give the skin test and then?
Yes.
And then they have to fly maybe?
Only those that are positive.
Yeah.
Which we estimate is not more than about 5% of employees. And that they would need to do one of two things. They would either have to go to Bethel, where the nearest x-ray is, or they would have to catch our x-ray technician when he is out doing x-rays.
Doctor, is there sort of a resurgence of TB rate?
Yes, sir. That's the other thing. You know, tuberculosis was 2 decades ago in Alaska the highest known rate of tuberculosis anywhere in the world. That doesn't mean that there aren't maybe work parts that have higher rates, but we have the highest known rate. And a massive campaign was put on, and the back of tuberculosis was broken. And it got down to where we were only running about 70 new cases a year. And I hate to say it, but the last 2 years, our cases have been going up to over 90 a year.
What's that due to?
It's due to a number of things. It's due to, first of all, that people forget that TB was a bad disease, number one. Number two, it's the physicians forget about that tuberculosis is still a prevalent disease, and they don't look for it like they used to. Several decades ago, when somebody came in and they were complaining they didn't feel well, they had a low-grade fever and so on, one of the first things you think of is TB, and you'd look for it. Nowadays, they don't. They'll look for everything else under the sun. These things combined with the fact that people are no longer aware of it, and certainly the medical care community isn't, allows the spread to occur. In other words, people aren't found until after they already have an active case, and then they already tend to start to spread it. We have embarked upon a very active campaign, our TB control division, to, you might say, re-educate the medical community, and secondly, that our public health nurses are spreading the word again that TB still exists. It's something we can't forget about.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's move on then to Senate Bill 508, Bethel Youth Social Services. I'm sorry to do that because... Anyone here to testify on that? Elizabeth?
I'm here to provide information.
All right, why don't you come forward?
My name is Nina Keeler with the Department of Health and Social Services. Senate Bill 508 would appropriate $66,510 to Pacific Youth Advocates for the operation of Pacific Receiving Home during the fiscal year ending June 30th, 1984. I spoke today with Dave Dapsovich, who's the board president of Pacific Youth Advocates. And he's pleased about the proposed grant, but he's concerned about the fact that the ending date of the funds is June 30th, 1984, because he's been able to manage his program with the supplemental appropriation he received last year, but he's concerned about the period of time between July 1st through December 30th until the new granting process goes through, or that doesn't go through the pandemic. Otherwise, he would have problems keeping present staff on board at their present salaries. He also identified some other needs that the SIDHA receiving home, including a need to purchase a van or to transport the children, and the need to increase the relief staff time, and the possibility of purchasing the building that they are currently leasing. His main concern was the end date of the bill, but I understand I talked with Senator Lyons' office, and it was their understanding from Senator Sackett's office that that would not be a problem. Funds could be spent on all of this.
What about Bethel?
We understand that the Bethel Receiving Home continues to lose money since the rates have been frozen. They say that they have been running at capacity lately. They have been full, so this has helped with their cash flow. The supplemental they received last year was put into renovation of the facility, and they had not quite decided what the greatest need was at this time. Additional funding except to continue to help with the operation of the home if the funds were not to. Capacity doesn't run.
I don't quite understand this, I guess. Mr. Gifford for Senator Sackett says that both Bethel and SIDHA should have had higher rates. Was there a problem that they were being penalized for their own modesty and what they were charging at the time of freezing in effect? Is that?
Yeah, I think that's essentially
Will the passage of this bill lead to other requests from other receiving homes for adjustments on the same principles? I mean, Hilltop.
I don't know. That was our concern last year when these two facilities were in for a supplemental. However, it didn't happen. We don't know whether it would be anticipated this year.
Did Bethel get its supplemental in 1983 on the same basis and then use the money for renovation and it's back again for another adjustment?
That's my understanding. Senator Sackett's office might be able to provide more information.
Can you?
I'm afraid I can't right at the moment. I do know that the Bethel the receiving home has requested that they receive the money, but exactly how they would spend it, I couldn't say. They do make reference to the need for using it for operational purposes, something like that. I can't provide further information for it.
Okay, thank you. Mary, do you want?
Excuse me, I didn't mean to speak on this, but I'll be back on this. Both the SIDHA and the Bethel homes were frozen at a very low rate years ago. And it's the interim rate thing. This year there's a bill that will bring about new rates for all the homes. And SIDHA and Bethel will then be on par with the rest of the state. We got a supplemental bill through last year to help these two homes during the last fiscal year to bring up their funding. In fact, the SIDHA one was so low they had closed. Last year's supplemental allowed them to reopen, hire a professional person to run it, and now they need this one again to get them through this year. After this year, they'll be put into a new rate, with the other homes at a sensible rate, and they'll be okay from now on.
Okay, my concern is not to see that the it's not a double dip where they, in two installments, get themselves in a better position than other agencies.
No, that's not. One of the cases under the new bill, SB 431, the new rates are not going to affect until January 1st. So these homes will still have a difficulty between July 1st through December 31st. So they will need that until then. And also, when the grants go into effect, SB 431 passes it.
Why were the rates so low in these instances? I mean, I don't understand that.
Okay, the second CPL tip was this low because they had relied on living house parents and hadn't even had the lease staff to help out. And so the house parents that they had left, at that point, they had to close because they couldn't find anybody else to do any work with those conditions. And they realized they needed to professionalize them. So they hired, with the addition of some of the parents, they hired a part-time director as well as Bethel receiving home. I have less information about them, but they were set at a rate of about $75 a day. And I think that the difficulty there was that they could make it on $75 a day as long as they were full. But with declining populations, if they weren't full, they just couldn't meet the existing homes.
Anyone else wish to testify on this? We have three bills we've taken testimony on, which seem to be non-controversial. One is House Bill 291 regarding mandatory TB examinations and quarantines. The other is sponsored substitute for House Bill 292, which requires annual screening of school employees. And the third one, which has a further referral to finance, makes supplemental appropriations for Bethel Social Services and Sitka Youth Advocates. I have a motion to these bills.
I move 291. Would you pass? 292 would be passed.
Objections?
Hearing none.
And on 508?
508.
Sorry?
508, I see. You pass on 502. 502.
Is there objection on? All right, so just wait till I circularize this. That'll take care of these bills and the meetings.